Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Pete Toll of the NBA Front Office Show. What's up, guys?
Oh, nothing much. Glad that you guys have me on here. Ready to talk some San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, Pete, happy to have you on. And this should be a good pod.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
And before we talk about the Spurs for next year, just a quick reminder, you can follow us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio. And before we look to next season, we're going to look back at last year. Obviously, the Spurs were 47-35, first round knockout by Golden State in five games. You know, the whole Kawhi drama, he only played nine games, and huge season by LaMarcus Aldridge. But what were your thoughts on last year, Pete?
Well, obviously, with the Kawhi drama, that kind of took everybody, you know, literally, you know, kind of had everybody baffled because, you know, first he was out, then he was coming back, and it was announced, I think, wasn't it against the Pelicans, I believe, that he was coming back, and then all of a sudden he was out again and, you know, indefinitely, and I was just like, this is so weird. I'm like, you know, one of the best players in the league, top five definitely, and, you know, he's your franchise star, and all of a sudden there's a difference of opinion. You know, where do you go from that? But the Spurs being the Spurs still came out, you know, third in defensive rating, which is phenomenal, not having Kawhi for the season and have that high of a, you know, mark in the season on defense really, really was surprising for me. And then I think they were only expected like 49, 50 wins, and they still squeaked out 47 on the season without Kawhi. So that was a big surprise to me. And then DeJounte Murray on the defensive end, he really, really stepped it up. And then, of course, getting the OV defense award, you know, was a plus two. And now if only his offense can replicate his defense.
Yeah, I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge for sure was tremendous. I mean, obviously, before the season started, that relationship looked like it was almost unrepairable. And then him and Pop sat down, and Pop admitted to using Aldridge wrong. And then last season, obviously, we saw Aldridge be the face of this team. As you mentioned, to John Murray, defensively, that guy's a stud, obviously already an all-defensive player. And he's just, you know, a young guy, like, who came out of nowhere. It's like, I had no idea who he was before last season. And then, of course, now, as we know, last year was Manu Ginobili's final season. And I'm glad he had that one playoff game. I think it was game four against the Warriors where he had, like, 16 points, and a lot of them came in the fourth quarter. It was fun watching Manu that final time. But I mean, a successful season for not having Kawhi Leonard for, you know, just nine games. This thing, San Antonio, you can never rule them out.
Exactly. It feels like they've made the playoffs like 500 straight years. But what would you guys say was the highlight of last season?
For me, I'm going to pick just a personal preference for me. I'm a big Patty Mills guy. I think that he's undervalued around the league. So I'm going to say, the game where he played and got the 3,000 points, and it came off the bench. I believe it was against the Cavs, if I'm not mistaken. And that basically also allowed him to move up to fourth all-time in three-pointers made. And I think with Patty Mills, I don't know that he fits best on a team as a starter. I think he's that spark plug as a bench guy. And I think you're really going to see him kind of step in the season now that Tony Parker isn't there. Obviously, Spurs fans know who Patty Mills is, but now the rest of the league, you know, casual fans and things like that will get to see Patty Mills. But for me, that was a highlight personally for me, just because I'm a Patty Mills guy.
I mean, the highlight for me would probably be it's tough to pick a moment. I mean, the Manu Ginobili game four probably is the game that sticks out the most to me of all the Spurs games. I mean, I didn't watch a ton of San Antonio during the regular season, but I watched every single game against the Warriors, and that game four to me stands out.
Yeah, like Corey mentioned earlier, LaMarcus Aldridge stepping up and be carrying the team and kind of bouncing back from the trade rumors, 23-8, you know, really nice season, really put the team on his back and got the Spurs into the playoffs. But on a negative note, what would be the most disappointing thing of last season for the Spurs? I mean, this is probably pretty easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty simple. Kawhi Leonard and just how that – just the drama and mystery around it, because you have Kawhi's uncle basically running the show, and it's basically him against the Spurs organization. And basically Kawhi just kind of really refused to play. And many people, you know, can say, well, you know, you don't have the injury, you don't know. But at the same time, you know, it came out that Tony Parker kind of had a similar injury and he comes back. And then it's almost like, in my mind, it's almost like Kawhi's camp felt like, well, if we come back, we may damage our chance to get to LA, even though he didn't end up going to LA anyway, but it would damage our chances. And so let's just sit out the year. Like, we just feel like we're bitter against the Spurs. And at the end, it's sad because, you know, nowadays with super teams coming together and things like that, you kind of wanted to root for that guy that may stay with the team his whole career. And I thought Kawhi could end up being that type player, but, you know, obviously not.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you asked me 2 years ago if Kawhi Leonard would be playing somewhere besides San Antonio, I'd probably say no way. This didn't seem like a reality before last season. As you mentioned, his uncle is, you know, like the puppet master. Like all those stories that came out about the fact that like San Antonio would go to like his hotel and they'd sneak him out like a back door. Like, like what the hell was going on? It's honestly like a movie almost. You know, and that was real life, obviously. So that's got to be the biggest disappointment, just him being hurt and then everything that came out around it. You know, Tony Parker speaking out against him. Manu even speaking out against Kawhi. It became really toxic really quickly, which for the first time in San Antonio in a long time where they really had serious drama.
Yeah, it's just not something you associate with the Spurs. Everything's kind of kept inside, and it was weird. It was just like Pete said, it was just a really weird situation, and there was a couple events where it looked like Kawhi was going to play, it looked like he was going to suit up, and even I think reports came out this summer, and it said, you know, Kawhi was playing tonight, and then like earlier at shoot around, they would tell the Spurs, oh, he's actually not going to play today. And like, it would just throw everything off. But if I had to throw out another disappointment, I think the drop off in 3-point percentage, I believe they went from first in the league the season before to 26th in the league, which obviously is a big drop off, especially in the NBA nowadays where 3-point shot is so important. But moving on from there onto this year's ranking by the OTG staff, the Spurs are coming in at number 12. Do you think this is fair, too high, too low? What are your thoughts?
I would say that's fair as far as where they are right now, because nobody knows. Like, yes, you have LaMarcus Aldridge and you have DeMar DeRozan, but do we really know how DeMar is going to actually fit? And we can guess, but we don't really know exactly how he's going to fit. More so, it baffles me. A lot of people that are doing their, even though training camp hasn't started, have done their kind of season predictions, have the Spurs out of the playoffs, and like, don't even have them competitive with teams like Portland and New Orleans and things like that, or teams like that. And I just don't understand it, because I have me personally, I have the Spurs right there in the tier of the Lakers, you know, the Denvers, you know, the West. And, you know, there's not going to be this rebuild drop off of, you know, we made it 21 straight playoff appearances. Now we're not going to compete. That's not going to happen. That's not why they brought, you know, DeMar in. That's why they have LaMarcus there as well. And then, of course, you have Greg Popovich. I think you're going to see guys like Marco Bellinelli, you know, with the three-point shooting, getting that percentage back up. You've got Bryn Forbes, who's an excellent three-point shooter, could make the rotation. Derek White could be in the rotation at either point or shooting guard. Then, of course, I mentioned Patty Mills earlier to help with shooting. And then the wild card, obviously, is Lonnie Walker coming in. We don't know if he's going to, you know, play right away because it's Greg Popovich. But I think he, you know, his style of play and his personality is going to force himself onto the court in a rotation role, kind of, you know, in and out just as a spark guy. So in no way do I see the Spurs kind of dropping off. So you guys having them, you know, 12 is right about, you know, where they should be.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty fair as well. You know, I wasn't that high on the Spurs heading into this podcast. I was like lukewarm. I kind of had the feeling, because I mean, realistically, there's going to be two teams in the West that miss the playoffs that right. are playoff teams in, you know, like, for example, the East. And, you know, I think the teams that are on the cusp are between, like, you know, the Nuggets, the Spurs, the Timberwolves, the Blazers. Maybe you can throw the Pelicans in there. Two of those teams are going to miss out. But just looking at the Spurs roster and knowing Popovich and everything else, there's just I just don't see this Spurs team missing the playoffs. I think 12 right now is spot on.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what you guys said. I think 12 at this point, not knowing how everyone's going to fit, like Pete mentioned, you know, and obviously having Pop is just like the ultimate, you know, X factor. So I think 12 right now, and there could definitely be some growth forward, maybe a drop or two down, possibly two, but I think this is about fair to go into the season. But looking at this year's additions, obviously, you know, the Spurs drafted at number 18. They drafted Lonnie Walker, first round out of Miami. What are your thoughts on him? What can he bring to this team?
Well, with Lonnie Walker, you know, like I said just a few minutes ago, his personality and, you know, really ability, I think, to play on the ball. He's not as great off the ball in college, but I think he's going to excel in the NBA just because of the speed of the ball or speed of the game. I think those are the two things that are going to get him on the court the quickest. He's a streaky shooter, doesn't have the greatest ball handling, but I don't think he necessarily has to show that off. I think he can play in transition, run the floor, and get buckets that way. And then as far as, you know, being an athlete, he is really up there probably already as one of the Spurs' best athletes on the team. His long wingspan allows him to defend multiple positions. I think he can defend point guard, shooting guard, and a little bit of small forward if he has to. He really excels scoring off the dribble. So the way that the Spurs motion offense runs, I think that he'll really excel in that. And then, you know, I know the stigma is Popovich doesn't play rookies, and obviously that's been true. But I think Lonnie Walker really forces his way into a role off the bench because right now he's competing with guys like Derek White, who had a great summer league, looks to be much improved. Played really well in the G League last year. I think he'll get a good, you know, spot in the rotation. And then you've also kind of have a glaring hole there at the small forward minutes as a, you know, backup. So I think, you know, Lonnie could get that 12 to 14 minutes kind of spread out off the bench.
Yeah, I like Lonnie Walker out of college, Miami. He looks quick. He looks really fast. Obviously, he can get to the rim. And also, you know, I agree with you on the fact that what stood out to me was the fact that, you know, with his wingspan, his defensive versatility. Obviously, in today's NBA, it's all about, you know, switching out, how much you can switch and everything else because it's how the defense is gone. I think Lonnie Walker is the perfect kind of guy to do that. I agree with you. I don't think he's going to play a ton of minutes, probably somewhere between that 10 and 15 range. And I also want to say I thought it was really classy by the Spurs to have David Robinson introduce him at the draft or sit down and talk with him on camera. It felt like after everything happened with Kawhi, they were like trying to make a statement that they were still a top flight organization.
That's how I took it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, definitely. And Lonnie Walker just has like some swag about him too, which I think is always really cool from a young player. But they also drafted at number 49 overall. I'm going to do my best to pronounce his name, Chimezie Metu. And he played, I believe, at USC, and he was 49 overall. Pete, what are your thoughts on him?
Well, he's 6'10", so he's active around the basket. Can score a little bit in the low post, but he's really been working on his ability to stretch the floor. I don't know how many threes he shoots, but he's going to at least be able to knock down that 18-foot jumper consistently. And with him, you know, with his size, even though he's 6'10", he can actually, you know, make some plays as far as a playmaker. So that'll actually work really well. I don't think he plays a lot in the NBA because I think he needs to put on more muscle because a lot of times he gets out-muscled down on the block and then tries to commit, you know, ticky-tack fouls, which Popovich is not going to put up with. And then if he has to switch on the perimeter, he's not the best as far as his lateral movement, but he is able to recover as a gifted shot blocker and kind of get those blocks and or weak side blocks and, you know, grab a few energy rebounds and kind of run the floor as well. But I would say he hardly plays at all in the NBA. This is a big chance for him to develop for the Austin Spurs.
Yeah. I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Defensively, he's got some potential. You like the size. I don't see him playing a ton of time in the NBA, and I didn't watch a lot. My college knowledge is limited to pretty much March Madness, so I didn't watch a lot of this guy play. And Nick, also, nice job on the name. I wouldn't be able to even pronounce any of this. So
we could, you could try for the fans, you know. If you want. Nah,
that's a different podcast. It's a different podcast.
But moving on to some more additions, we could talk about trades. Obviously, the big news is picking up DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl. We'll start with DeRozan. What do you think he's going to bring to the Spurs? You know, how much better is he going to be on the Spurs, or is he going to be a little bit lesser role? What do you expect to see from this year, Pete?
I think you're going to get classic DeMar DeRozan, kind of plays the mid-range game. Now that he's able to kind of stretch out to the three-point line, I think that's really going to help in this system. He's definitely going to get more open looks the way that the Spurs move the ball around. I just hope that, you know, he kind of buys into Popovich's system and doesn't try to play a lot of ISO situations, because in the end, moving the ball around is going to get him better looks, even if it is in the mid-range. I think that obviously, you know, playing in the West, it's going to be hard competition for him as far as another all-star berth. So I wonder how much is he going to be able to improve, you know, on, you know, in the West as far as, you know, versus the East, as far as the all-star game, you know, and an all-star berth is concerned. But I think, you know, the Spurs are going to be happy with what they get. Obviously, it's not going to be Kawhi on the defensive end, but I think you're going to get a little bit better player on the offensive end.
What do you think defensively? Sorry to cut you off, Corey. What do you think? You think he's going to improve defensively? You know, obviously that was some of the talk in Toronto. He wasn't a great defender. He didn't always put in the best effort. Do you think Pop's going to get more out of him?
I think so. I think if he had stayed with Toronto, they were going to really push him to be a better defender. I know Nick Nurse was really going to do that. And I think that Popovich demands that you defend. And so it's either and Popovich has no qualms of sitting guys down, you know, either. I don't think it gets to that point where it's like, all right, we bench our star and here we go with more drama after Kawhi. But I think it's he's going to have a coach that's established, you know, upper echelon name that basically can hold him accountable. And DeMar is smart enough to know, okay, this guy is – you know, one of the greatest coaches of all time. I think I need to listen and buy in. So, yeah, I think he's going to be – I don't think he's going to be worlds better. I mean, he's not going to be all defense or anything like that, but I think you're going to see a little bit better effort out of him.
Yeah, I think we're going to see the best version of DeRozan to date this year in San Antonio. I know, like something I've been seeing on Twitter a lot is people saying, like, Kyle Lowry is better than DeMar DeRozan. And yeah, I know sure. I know that's like a real – like, I don't – I mean, I personally lean towards DeRozan.
Right,
I understand the fact that he's not that good of a defender, but I still think the offense almost makes up for it. And if he even plays like an average defender, then he's way better than Lowry. But that's a different topic. So like, I really podcast. Like, yeah, I really like DeRozan on this first team. I think he's perfect. He can attack the basket. Obviously, it's not great that they're probably going to shoot a ton of mid-range shots between him and Aldridge. But, you know, I think that's okay as long as those two guys are efficient. And DeRozan can get to the rim. He's great at drawing fouls, which I think is going to be crucial. And then I like him and Aldridge. I think that's a pretty good duo, having a big guy like Aldridge and a guy like DeRozan. You got defensive guards around him and Murray. I don't think it's that bad of a move. I think this is, for what I expected them to get in the Kawhi trade, this is better than what I expected. And not to mention Jakob Poeltl. He's going to be solid for them as well.
Yeah, talking Jakob Poeltl, what do you guys expect from this season? Obviously, he wasn't just a throw-in. He had some value in Toronto, was part of that bench unit that was very successful. What do you expect from Poeltl this season?
Well, for me, I expect a very vastly improved season, because he's going to have to be, because Pau Gasol is getting up there. You can't really – I know we're going to talk about this because we're going to talk about our starting lineups and stuff like that, but with LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't think he feels 100% comfortable playing the center spot all the time. So you're going to have to be able to put, you know, Jakob in there and play. He's just going to have to be more efficient with his minutes that he gets, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Because if you're the Spurs and you move the ball around, he's going to get touches in the low post. So he's going to have chances to do that. Now, what could improve his game if he's able to really step out and knock down, you know, deep shots, whether it's mid-range or even step out to the three and take some of those as well. But then also his effort is going to have to be there rebounding the ball, because, you know, based on the way the roster is, they're only really true bigs are him, Gasol, and Aldridge, because I don't really count Rudy Gay as a big. I don't count Dante Cunningham as a true big. And then we know Davis Bertans is a three-point shooter. So, you know, he's really going to have a chance at a big role, and I think he actually steps in knowing that he can be the future center for the franchise possibly.
100% agree, but especially with Pau Gasol getting up there in age, who knows how much he has left in the tank. Jakob Poeltl is really going to have a chance to earn big minutes. And I know last year he played in all 82 games, an average of like 18 minutes per game. His per 36 minutes would look pretty good. You know, 13 points, maybe 13 points, it's 9 rebounds. If he gives the Spurs that kind of production, then that's fantastic. Obviously, that's not going to happen because I don't think he plays that many minutes. Right. But in like a, you know, 20 to 25 minute range, I agree with you too. I don't think Aldridge wants to play the center position for, you know, 35 minutes a game. He'd rather play that, you know, face up four. Jakob Poeltl is definitely going to have the opportunity to play some big time minutes for this Spurs team.
Now, looking at some of the free agent signings, obviously Marco Bellinelli, 2 years, 12 mil, give them some much needed 3-point shooting. You know, some people thought this was maybe a little bit of an overpay. What are your thoughts on the Bellinelli signing?
I love Bellinelli. I mean, obviously he played with the Spurs previous, the Warriors, a couple other teams as well. My Sixers last year, of course. And I got to see firsthand what he's capable of as far as shooting the ball. Just his veteran leadership too. Like, he can really help the guards on the roster as far as, you know, from a veteran standpoint, especially, of course, shooting the three ball. But he knows Popovich's system, so you can plug him in to the rotation right away. And, you know, simple as that, he's going to fire away from three and get you some quick buckets.
Yeah, I think it might have been a slight overpay. I kind of agree with that. But they needed more shooting. This is a 3-point shooter. And as you mentioned, Pete, he's played for Pop already in the past. So I like the Bellinelli signing. I'm a fan of it.
Yeah, and maybe a touch overpay, but you get a guy who fits in your system. You already know what you're going to get, and he's kind of a Pop dude. So moving on from there, though, they also picked up Dante Cunningham, 1 year, $2 million and change, and Quincy Pondexter, 1 year, $2 million and change. You know, Cunningham actually impressed me a little bit at the end of last season with the Nets. He shot a nice percentage from three and was just a solid veteran. Quincy Pondexter is more of a case where, is he going to be healthy? What can we expect? We really haven't seen him play big minutes in the NBA in a long time. But what are your thoughts on picking up these two?
Well, with Pondexter, if he was absolutely healthy, he could help you with 3-point shooting as well. But I think he's more there as a veteran, you know, in the locker room, more than he can do anything on the court. I know, you know, everybody, including myself, was happy to see him finally get back after multiple seasons lost because of his knee. But, you know, he's, like I said, more of a locker room, end of the rotation, probably won't play, you know, most nights. And then if you're looking at Dante Cunningham, you get a versatile, you know, front court player that can play both small forward and power forward. I think he's more of a power forward. I don't like him at small forward, but he can stretch out and knock down the three if needed. He's more of that energy hustle guy defensively, can rebound, give you some spot minutes here and there. He and Davis Bertans are going to really have a kind of a back and forth camp battle because it's going to be, you know, Davis's 3-point shooting versus Cunningham's ability to switch on defense. Who wins that backup power forward job? That's something I'll look forward to seeing. But I think Cunningham, like I said, is versatile enough to get minutes at both spots, and I think he is going to be a favorite of Popovich.
Yeah, I mean, Dante Cunningham, he played with the Nets for a little bit of last year, right, Nick?
Yep, he played with New Orleans, and then he got traded to the Nets. And like I said before, he was pretty solid, and I was impressed. And pretty much most of what Pete said was, you know, spot on. I wouldn't play him personally at the three. All the Nets minutes was mostly at the four and some small ball five. I think laterally, he's better off playing at the four.
Yeah, for sure. And Quincy Pondexter, you know, as Pete said, it's kind of hard to know what he's going to give you after, you know, not playing for 2 years and barely playing last year. But I mean, who knows? If there's anything left in the tank, Popovich is going to get it out of him, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, you know, they re-signed their guys, Bertans, as Pete has mentioned, 2 years, 14 mil. Rudy Gay re-signed. Forbes re-signed as well. What are your thoughts on bringing back these guys, and what do you expect from them?
Well, Bertans, lots and lots of threes, no defense, but he's out there to be that 3-point specialist. So he'll obviously, I think, be in the rotation. Like I just said, him and Cunningham will battle it out. I think they'll kind of flip-flop. You know, if Davis has it going some evenings, then Dante won't get in. And some nights that they're playing matchups to where, you know, Davis might get killed on the defensive end, they may play Dante. But then looking at Bryn Forbes, he kind of carved out a role. For anybody that doesn't know, he is a shooter through and through. It's not really the greatest ball handler. The Spurs don't look for him to be. So he's strictly, you know, kind of the shooting guard mold. Get in there, score some quick buckets. And that's really what you want to count on him as, kind of that situational shooter. And then with Rudy Gay, you know, he was not healthy last season, and he still was productive. So I think this year he's fully healthy. He's played with DeMar DeRozan previously. So I think the chemistry there, and they actually are good friends in the, you know, outside of the NBA, they play together in some different pickup leagues during the offseason. So they know each other really well. So I think that they're going to fit really well. I just hope it doesn't go into, you know, isolation-esque, you know, kind of passing to each other and kind of freezing out, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't think Pop would let that happen, but, you know, that's a worst case scenario. But what I think will actually happen, you know, realistically, is that DeMar DeRozan gets slightly edged for an all-star spot, but still has a very, very productive season. And then LaMarcus is the second leading scorer. And then third is going to be Rudy Gay right there, kind of picking up the slack. Cause I think now that he's healthy, he's going to show that, he can still score.
Yeah, Burton's I liked, you know, bringing back a three-point shooter is fine. And Forbes, big Forbes guy, let me tell you. From my 2K days, I really like Forbes. He has a nice jump shot in 2K, and I just, for some reason, I get a lot of perfect shots with him. So he's a good signing as well. Like you mentioned, he doesn't have crazy dribbling abilities or anything else, but, you know, set a screen, let him get loose off a screen, some pick and pops. That's where he kind of strives. And then Rudy Gay, I thought I was going to bring him back. He, you know, coming back from the Achilles injury, right? Didn't he rupture his Achilles 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, that's – I don't know how long it takes to really come back fully from that. He doesn't look necessarily as athletic as he used to be, but as you mentioned, I think on this current Spurs team heading into next year, with the relationship he has in DeRozan, because they played together in Toronto, I think, for like half a season as well. I think Rudy Gay is definitely going to be the third scorer as well. I'm expecting big things.
Just talking on Bertans real quick, were you surprised he didn't get more attention in free agency?
Yeah, in a shooter's market, yeah. I was, yeah.
Because I looked at him as a guy like, you know, the three-point shot and being that little versatility, and then he's still relatively young, having a lot of chance to improve. I was surprised we didn't hear his name a little bit more, but, you know, Spurs locked him back up. But talking departures, you know, obviously we already talked about a Kawhi a lot, so we're not going to really touch on him anymore. But Danny Green, what are they going to lose not having a Danny Green around? I think a lot of people forget that he's part of the trade.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to lose a good three-point shooter. Obviously, a great locker room character guy. Defensively, you're going to take a hit at the well, depending on where you see DeMar DeRozan playing. If you see him as more of a small forward, or if you see him at the two guard, you're going to take a hit defensively at the two guard. For me personally, because I think DeMar kind of can slot in at small forward, and I know we'll talk about that. But you know, Green's been there so long and just fits everything that you know, Popovich likes in a player. That's going to be a big loss and big shoes for Bellinelli to come back and fill. So, you know, I don't know. If I'm the Spurs, it's going to take a collective effort this year until they kind of figure out what they have in, you know, Derek White, what they have. Well, they know what they're getting, I guess, in Bellinelli, but they really have to see kind of what they have for the future in White and Lonnie Walker and some of those guys.
What are your thoughts on Danny Green being out, Corey?
I mean, they're going to miss him. Obviously, he's been there for, you know, the last, since I can remember, he's always been a Spur. Great three-point shooter, good team guy. I am concerned with the training staff only because he played all last season with a torn groin or whatever he played with.
So I think that was by choice, though. They told him that he was injured, and he said that he was going to play through it. I don't think they knew the exact, you know, details of the injury, but I think he was his choice to play.
Okay, well, never mind. I'll take that back. Take that back. No slander. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to miss him. Danny Green's a class act, and a very good, you know, 3-and-D player. He's actually, I think, almost at this point underrated for how good of a defender he is.
Talking about some of the other departures, Kyle Anderson, Matt Costello, Darren Hilliard, Joffrey Laverne, Tony Parker, Brandon Paul. You know, what out of these guys, who are they going to miss? Should they have re-signed some of them? What are your thoughts?
Obviously, Tony Parker is the biggest one. I think Parker knew that it's now Murray's team at the point guard spot, and just the culture is not the same. No Tim Duncan. You know, he kind of knew that he wasn't going to have the biggest role on the team, so he wanted to go somewhere where he was still going to be able to be productive, not kind of have to be a guy that may not play on a few nights. And that's going to kind of be a loss for the Spurs, because they, you know, even though they have Patty Mills, and I love Patty Mills, as I said earlier, Patty Mills isn't the greatest distributor. So I think just kind of the experience and being able to get guys in their spots, I think they're going to miss that from Tony Parker. I was kind of surprised, just because of the lack of depth they have with bigs, that they didn't try to bring back Joffrey Laverne, just because he's still young enough that, you know, he can score on the block. He can get you some rebounds. Not the greatest defender, but at least he'd be another body that you can kind of count on. But the other guys, Hilliard, I know he signed overseas, and I haven't heard anything about Matt Costello, you know, maybe even re-upping on another two-way or anything like that. And then with Brandon Paul. He didn't really get to show a lot to me as far as what the overall skills that he has, because he can defend, you know, more of a scorer than a lead ball handler. But I thought that he might have sticked, you know, until they basically drafted Lonnie Walker, and then it was over with after that, because I don't think you need two of those type players. And then Kyle Anderson kind of has that in between, like everybody calls them, slow-mo game, that can kind of do a versatile amount of everything. But I don't think, based on the way that the team is trending now with the guys like DeRozan, you've got Rudy Gay, and then LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't think there's really a need for another slowdown player. You need guys that are going to be able to shoot consistently from the perimeter to surround those guys. So I don't think it's the biggest loss with Kyle Anderson.
Yeah, I think the two guys they missed the most are Tony Parker and Kyle Anderson, but not as much because of how they're changing the roster, as you just mentioned. You know, Kyle Anderson, not a very good shooter from deep. You know, like you mentioned, slow-mo game. You really don't want that on that team. And obviously, for the money that the Grizzlies offered, it would be silly for me if the Spurs had matched that. And then for Tony Parker, I'm more so upset that he's just not going to finish career with the Spurs. But that's just really not how the NBA goes. He wants to play. He's going to play in Charlotte. Obviously, Borrego being the head coach in Charlotte, being with the Spurs, him and Parker have a relationship. So I'm sure Parker's going to get plenty of playing time over there. And then the other guys, I don't see them missing any of them.
Getting into the prediction portion of the show, starting five on opening night for the Spurs, who you got?
I've got Murray at point guard. I'm going to go a little unconventional. I've got Bellinelli starting at the two guard. They moved DeRozan up to the three. You've got Rudy Gay at power forward, and then Aldridge starts at center. So I think you preserve Gasol's body, and you allow him to be able to do everything that he does against the backups and still be able to get plenty of minutes. And then that also allows kind of the lineup of, you basically have Gasol, Bertans. You could, you know, kind of throw a combo of Patty Mills, and then what's the other guy I was thinking of? Patty Mills and Derek White was the other guy at the shooting guard position. And then you could kind of sprinkle in either Gay or DeRozan, kind of depending on how you wanted to run that kind of backup rotation lineup. That's kind of what I see.
Man, I really like the thought, though, of Gasol not starting now. my starting lineup is the more traditional. It's Murray, DeRozan, Gay, Aldridge, and then Gasol. And I just think Gasol is better for the tip. It's kind of like that, how the Warriors did. They had Zaza play like the first, you know, 4 minutes of the game, and they took him out and went small. That's kind of what I see them doing with Gasol. But I could also see your point, Pete, of them trying to, you know, take some of the load off Gasol, let him go against some of the backup players, because obviously he's going to be in year 18 of his career, and he's been through the ringer.
Yeah. From my own personal perspective, if I was coaching, I would go with Pete's lineup, but I think they're going to throw out the lineup that Corey said, Murray, DeMar, Gay, LaMarcus Aldridge, or Gasol. Do you guys think that Poeltl could possibly start? Do you think that's a possibility or no chance?
I don't know that he, unless Rudy Gay is just not there, you know, as far as healthy as he's, you know, claiming he is, and if he has a down year, but I don't know that Poeltl, maybe if, I'll say this, if things go badly later, you know, towards the end of the season, then yes. But, you know, ideally, if they're as good as I think they're going to be, then no, he's not going to be a starter.
What are your thoughts on Poeltl possibly getting the starting lineup?
I don't think so. No, he's at the start. I mean, maybe we're near the All-Star break and he's been playing phenomenal off the bench, and Gasol maybe looks, you know, like he's in year 18, that they decide to switch it up or something. But I don't see it, at least not to start the year.
Do you guys see any other position battles, you know, maybe in the starting lineup or, you know, in the rotation in general?
For me, the big thing I'm going to look at is how are the backcourt, you know, minutes going to be distributed? Because you have Patty Mills, obviously can play point guard. You've got Derek White, could play point guard and shooting guard. You've got Lonnie Walker that could play all three, you know, a point guard, shooting guard, small forward. You've got Bellinelli there, Bryn Forbes there. Whether you consider DeRozan, you know, a shooting guard or small forward. I mean, there's a lot of minutes to go around, and somebody's not going to play. And I like all of those guys, but I think off the bat, you're probably going to see, you know, Derek White get a ton of minutes. You're going to see, you know, Patty Mills, Murray, and Bellinelli kind of take those minutes. But it'll be an interesting camp battle to kind of see how that goes. And the other one that may emerge, if Poeltl makes a jump, could he battle enough in training camp to maybe even consider a starting position? But I don't think it gets there, but that's something that I'd really keep my eye on, because from everything that I've read is he's really putting in a lot of work this offseason. So we'll see.
I think the only positional battle for me, like you said, maybe they go small. So DeRozan's playing the three, and Gay's at the four. I was going to say Goody, not Rudy. Gay's at the four. And then that shooting guard position becomes, like you said, Derek White, Bellinelli, you know, Lonnie Walker too, depending on how many minutes he gets early on. I think that would open it up. And who knows? They could probably do a two guard lineup with Patty Mills and DeJounte Murray. No, or is that out of the question?
I think you could, because Murray's versatile enough as a defender. It's
you
just,
play the two, right?
Yeah, he'd play the two, and then obviously Mills would play the one. But yeah, I mean, you could do that. But I think just based on kind of what they have, I don't know if they'll play them a ton together, but we'll have to see.
So yeah, for me, it'd just be that two guard position.
Who is your breakout starter for next season?
That's a good question. I'm going to say Murray improves a bunch. I don't think he makes like a gigantic leap on the offensive end, but I think you're going to see a considerable enough leap shooting the ball that, you know, defenders actually respect him on the offensive end. Because right now it's all about his defense, and whatever he gives you on offense is great, because he's more of an inconsistent shooter. But I think, you know, being around – you know, guys like Bellinelli, and then another year, you know, with, you know, being in Popovich's system, I think that's really going to help him kind of, you know, up his offensive game, because he is going to have a guy like Lonnie Walker, Derek White, those guys right there kind of giving him competition. So I think he's going to be the most improved for me.
Same for me. I think the defense is going to be there still. I think offensively, there's just another jump to take. You know, he averaged 3 points his rookie year, 8 points last year. I think he's going to average over 10, somewhere around probably 12, 13 a game. Raise the shooting percentages, maybe develop a slightly better 3-point shot. Obviously, he didn't take a lot of attempts last year, barely took one a game. But I'm expecting that to be a part of his game next year and just be a more steady, like you said, jump shot shooter.
Yeah, I'm going to be super interesting and pick the same guy. So DeJounte Murray for me as well. Honestly, Pete said it earlier in the show. You know, his defense was so great. We're just waiting for the offense to catch up. Now he has an offseason to work on that. He's going to have some teammates. He's going to be asked to step up into a bigger role. So I think Murray's just, you know, due for a breakout season. And we know how player development is in San Antonio. So there's no reason not to really expect it. But what would be one bench player you expect to break out?
For me, Derek White. I really think we got to see last year he dominated the G League. And based on the roster construction last year, he wasn't going to play. That was just, you know, or at least wasn't going to play for the San Antonio Spurs, you know. But I think that we got to see glimpses of him in the summer league and just kind of how his shots improved, his ability to get to the holes, hit contact, how that's improved. Now if he can improve on the defensive end, and hold his own there, he's looking at big minutes. But he's the guy I think is going to take the biggest jump. And I would not be shocked if they decide to kind of play a versatile lineup and DeRozan does end up at the small forward. I would not be shocked that throughout the course of the season, if he does not end up with a starting role and then Bellinelli shifts to a backup role.
Interesting. For me, my breakout bench player is going to be Jakob Poeltl. I think he's just going to have the opportunity, as we discussed earlier. You know, he is the youngest center on this roster. I think depending on how Pau Gasol looks, it wouldn't be crazy to think he may be too slow to play in today's NBA, where he's, you know, limited to really just playing like, you know, 20 or maybe even under 20 minutes a game. So I'm going to go with Jakob Poeltl. I think he's going to play probably somewhere between 24 and 26 minutes a game. And I think he's going to be a big part of this team going forward.
Yeah, I like both picks. I'm just going to be different. I'm going to go with Bertans. I just like three-point shooting, especially out of the big position, and then getting that three-point shooting number up and just another season in the NBA to kind of develop some more. But talking wins in playoffs, what's best-case scenario for the Spurs next year?
For me, I have them as best-case scenario. They end up with the in second place behind the Warriors in the West. That is a extreme best case probably for most people. I would say they'd get around 56 wins. That's the best case scenario. You know, I threw it out there of what if everything fell perfectly and just everything hits on all cylinders.
My best case scenario is going to, it's going to be 50 wins. That's best case scenario. Cause I think there is a team in the West that's going to kind of like how the Jazz were last year, that just surprises everybody and plays well above their ceiling. So best case scenario for the Spurs would be 50 wins.
Yeah, I'm going to go best case scenario, 52 wins. I don't see them getting up to the 2 seed, but I could see them being in anywhere from that 5-3 range if everything kind of goes perfectly, like Pete mentioned. You know, you see DeMar fit in really nicely. They step it up at the 3-point line, defensively still great. But on the negative side, worst case scenario next year.
Worst case scenario, they miss the playoffs, and they're around 40, 41 wins. I just don't see that happening because I'm not – nothing against any of the teams in the West, but I just don't see teams like Minnesota. I'm not extremely high on their brand of basketball, and I'm not extremely high on kind of overall what Portland brings. So those are the two teams that I think could slide out of the playoffs. The Spurs, I don't know. Everything would have to be – you would have to get a major injury to either DeRozan or Aldridge. You know, Gasol would just have to be awful. Murray would have to regress defensively. I mean, so many things would have to go wrong for this team not to be, you know, either mid-tier or, you know, upper tier in the West.
Yeah, I think worst case scenario would be kind of what the Nuggets went through last year, being 10 games over 500 and missing the playoffs, which is very possible because it's the Western Conference. So I think the worst case would be them being, you know, above 500 and missing out in the playoffs. And then maybe, you know, along with that worst case scenario would be if maybe DeRozan doesn't look that good in San Antonio.
Yeah, I mean, it is a possibility. I think worst case for me is around the same thing as you guys, you know, 40 to 42 wins and they just miss out on the postseason. Maybe somebody gets hurt or things just don't gel right. And then, you know, we're questioning what's happening in San Antonio. But what is your actual prediction for next season?
My actual prediction, I have them right at 6th in the West. I think they get, it could be anywhere from 45 wins to 47. And that is because I think losing guys like Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, obviously Kawhi's defensive ability, even though they didn't have Kawhi last year. I think, you know, you couple all three of those guys together and they're going to take just a slight step back, but I don't think it's a step back as far as, well, they didn't try to win games. I just think it's more so the rest of the Western Conference is so much better. I mean, you've got so many teams. You can go down the list and so many different teams improved. And then the Spurs, you look at them and they're like, okay, well, they got DeRozan, but how else did they really improve? But being that it's the Spurs system and Greg Popovich as the coach, I'm still a believer in them. I think the sixth seed, maybe even fifth, depending how things kind of fall, but that's pretty much where I think they're going to be.
So the Vegas over under is 43.5 for the Spurs. That feels really low. So for me, I think they're going to get right around 47, 48 wins. I think they'll be somewhere between the 4 and 6 seed. I think they probably finish like fifth. Watch out if they get the 4th seed, though. If they get home court in the first round of the playoffs, that would be extremely in their favor. So I'm going to go with, 48 wins and a 5 seed.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 47 wins. I think anywhere between that 6 and 4, even honestly 7 and 4 range, because we know how close the West was last year. I think one game can make all the difference if somebody needs to be rested or sprains an ankle or something. So, but I expect them to get back in the playoffs. I wouldn't be perplexed if somehow they missed it, just because like Pete mentioned and Corey's mentioned before, you know, the West is just so stacked. There's so many good teams and somebody's going to have to miss out. But on from the wins, the truth, what emoji represents the Spurs for you?
Me, it's I'm not like the best emoji guy, so I'm gonna say the surprise emoji. I don't even know honestly which one that is, but I just think they're gonna surprise a lot of people with everybody. Just I'm baffled every columnist that I read that says the Spurs are gonna fall off, and I'm like, DeMar DeRozan's an all-star, LaMarcus Aldridge is an all-star, Murray's all defensive. You still got Gasol there that can give you good contribute very well. Rudy Gay can fill it up, you know, on various nights. So they have a lot of pieces that other teams don't have. And I just don't know where, like, I've read that, you know, some people have the Jazz number 2 in the West. And I'm like, I like the Jazz defensively, but offensively, I just don't know where that's going to come from. But we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm going to go with the surprise emoji. I don't do anything fancy. I'm sure there's some other emojis out there that could probably describe it better. But
I had a different emoji, but seeing the over-under being 43.5, I'm going to go with the shush emoji, because it feels like everybody is just sleeping on the Spurs again, and they're going to be in the middle of the West, and everyone, once again, by April, will be like, oh, wow, the Spurs are, you know, like pretty good at basketball.
So I'm going to go with a different emoji, but almost the same reason as Corey. I'm going to go with the emoji face that has a Z's, so it's sleeping, because everyone's always sleeping on the Spurs. It's like every year, it's like, oh, they're going to get in the postseason. Oh, no, they're not. And then all of a sudden, they're still there, and they're doing the same thing, and they're always a tough out. And like Corey mentioned, if they do land a 4th seed, I wouldn't necessarily want to play them in the first round. But where does this team rank in terms of league pass rating 1 through 10?
I'm going to say right in the middle at 5, just because – you're going to have the fans that are going to wonder what life is like after, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker being there, Manu Ginobili. But after that wears off, I don't think the Spurs are that exciting with highlights. And, you know, they're the traditional, more fundamental brand of basketball. And I personally like to see the up-tempo teams and kind of watch. So I'm a huge fan of, like, obviously I'm a Sixers guy, but – I like every team, and I know that's probably cliche, but I feel like I like watching like a Sacramento game to see, okay, how's De'Aaron Fox going to develop, or, you know, different things like that. How are the rookies in Phoenix going to develop? How's Luka Doncic going to do in Dallas? Like, so I flip around a lot. So, you know, for me, they're right in the middle. Like, I'll watch a few games. Okay, are we getting the same DeRozan we're getting in Toronto? What, how's Rudy Gay going to come back this season? Is Aldridge going to dominate down low again, you know, those kind of things?
League pass for you, Corey.
League pass for me. Sorry, my mic is muted. League pass for me would be right around a 5-2. I'm going to go to 5.5. I'm intrigued to see how DeRozan and Aldridge look, but as Pete mentioned, I mean, they don't necessarily play the most interesting brand of basketball. I also like watching teams that get up and down the floor. Spurs kind of tend to slow it down more. So I say a 5.5, but they do definitely have intrigue in it, because if DeRozan and Aldridge are playing at their peak, this is a really good basketball team.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you guys. I think I'm about a six, you know, for pretty much the same reason. Not a ton of star potential, not a ton of super intriguing players, but you always want to kind of check on the Spurs and see how DeMar fits in and what can we expect from him in the West. But what TV show would you watch over the Spurs? Obviously, hypothetical. We all love and cover basketball. But a gun to your head, you had to pick one TV show of the Spurs, what would it be?
That's a good question. I was going to be that guy that says everything because that's what I watch is basketball. And
we're not going to let you off easy, Pete.
I would say I'm trying to think what's even.
He's choosing death.
I don't even know like what's like a hugely popular show. Like I'm not going to go as far as like a show like Game of Thrones or anything like that, but I don't know. That's a good question. I'll watch it over anything that's on primetime lineup of Fox or ABC. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. Corey, what do you got?
I'm going with Boardwalk Empire. It's one of the HBO shows. It follows like the Prohibition period on the boardwalk, obviously, in Atlantic City. But it's, you know, it's got like Lucky Luciano, all those like mobsters. I'm a big mobster guy. I like that kind of stuff. A little bit slow, but you know, I have actually another show I've never finished. I think I'm like halfway through.
No way.
it's a recurring theme, but I'd probably watch that show over the Spurs.
I'm going to go with Parks and Rec. I've watched it so many times in a row. I don't have as big an interest as I did, you know, when I watched it the fourth time. But any last thoughts on the Spurs, you know, that we didn't touch on today?
Just that I'll just reiterate that I think a lot of, columnists and analysts around the NBA and just fans in general are just kind of writing off the Spurs. And I don't think you can do that. I mean, you know, 47 wins without their best player last year, and you gained DeMar DeRozan, hopefully a healthy Rudy Gay, you know, some good potential future pieces and Pirtle, having Murray there defensively, and then Derek White and Lonnie Walker. I don't see it. So if you're not a San Antonio Spurs fan, just because you felt like, you know, okay, well, they have Tim Duncan, they have Kawhi, they have Tony Parker, this is not my favorite basketball, I think it's going to be a transition into the next wave of, you know, Spurs culture. And, you know, why not join the ride now?
Yeah, for me, I – go ahead.
No, you go. I was going to just ask you if you had any final thoughts.
Oh. I was just going to say that I think the Spurs are going to once again be another team that is slept on for majority of the year in the West and then not talked about. And you look at the standings, you'll be like, oh, wow, the Spurs are fifth. It's just how they always just fly under the radar, it feels like, anyways. And I think this is just another typical year where Popovich is going to get the most out of this team. And DeRozan, I think, is, like Pete mentioned earlier, probably going to just miss down an all-star spot. There's just too many guys out West. But he's going to have an extremely good year. I'm actually really excited for it.
We didn't touch on this a ton. Do you think the Spurs can make it past the first round and get into the second round?
Depends on the matchup. I mean, if you're playing
What teams would you like them as a favorite over in the first round? If they're, let's say, their home court and they get a matchup against X team?
Pelicans. I would take them over the Pelicans. I'd take them possibly over Denver. I could take them over OKC because I'm not a huge Westbrook fan.
Yeah, OKC would be dangerous. I think the Spurs would be a really tough challenge for them too.
Anybody else, it'd be kind of hard to really envision because even with the Lakers, and I never count out LeBron and kind of what he's able to do. The Jazz defensively, you know, might be tough. So, yeah, those teams that I mentioned I think would be key.
What about you, Corey?
I think OKC would be – I don't think OKC would want to see the Spurs. Blazers, definitely not. And probably – I don't think the Timberwolves would either. And then lastly, I don't know. I don't think the Jazz would either. Those are my four teams.
All right. Well, any last thoughts, guys? Or are we good to go?
No, I think we're good. I pretty much think I threw out there enough that I think that the Spurs are underrated. So, you know, just go watch them. And hopefully everybody enjoys DeMar DeRozan in San Antonio.
Well, big thanks to you, Pete, for hopping on the show. Tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
Absolutely. Thanks again, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at PeteTollNBA. You know, I'm always, you know, willing to have great basketball discussions, things like that. I actually co-host a podcast of my own with Keith Smith, which is called the NBA Front Office Show. And you can find us on Twitter at Front Office Show. And then you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, some other podcasts, you know, players as well, NBA Front Office. We're kind of unique in the sense that we talk about specific roster guys. We go as deep as the two-way guys, and we go in-depthly about, you know, all kinds of things from what type of player they are, how they're performing during the season. We do off-season wrap-ups and stuff like that. So if you want a little bit of a different look than, you know, what most podcasts have where they touch on just like the top-tier guys, then please give us a listen.
Yeah, very insightful show. I honestly personally listen to it. Pete and Keith do a great job. And Corey, always a pleasure to talk hoops with you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can catch the show and all the previews on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Thanks again, Pete. And peace out, knuckleheads.